Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 194. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Rosining up the bow here in Lakeville.
Graham Thickens.
Fiddling around.
And Phil Wilson.
Brought to you today by Powder Milk Biscuit. They're tasty.
And nutritious. And nutritious. What about ketchup?
Well,
the ketchup board too.
Yeah. And then all of our startups are above average.
There you go.
Yeah, but I'm bum.
We should get Garrison on as a guest sometime. I'm sure he's an avid listener.
And talk about what?
And I'm sure he'd be so
the tech of Prairie Home Companion.
Oh, like yeah. See, people at NPR aren't even allowed to look at that man, much less talk to him. So,
I'm sure. I bet you that's it. Yeah.
Oh, everybody looks down when their eyes do not meet Garrison Keillor. I'm making that up. I don't know.
He likes books, so we couldn't have a conversation about tablets.
There you go.
That's for sure. Well, hey, smart things. They a $3 million seed round. I didn't think it would happen quite this quickly.
Yeah. Interesting stuff.
What a good party round that thing was. How many names were connected with that? I didn't count them, but it went on and on and on.
Well, you know what? It's really the first one. Now, the local company here, Digi International, has iDigi, and iDigi is also a platform. And they can manage any protocol and so on, but they're at the high end. They're really going after the enterprise level, even though they seem to be going after the lower level. And these guys are a platform play for consumer, and that's why I think everybody's so excited about it, because they saw what happened with Nest, the thermostat company, and how much buzz that got. So I think Smart Things, it's got a lot of legs.
Yeah, congratulations to them.
Yeah, it was great.
Ton of people came into that deal. Even like Ron Conway's SV Angel, I think I saw listed in there. The godfather of all angels. I don't know if that all kind of came about as a result of their appearance at the Dublin Web Summit.
Probably. Well, wouldn't that guy be an archangel, by the way?
Yes.
Instead of the godfather of all angels.
The archangel. Yes. He is that. So yeah, a lot of their attention, they got a lot of attention out of that, I'm sure, and that undoubtedly helped them.
Yeah.
Crunch Fund is in, Loic Lemaire. So money from the West Coast for the most part.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, it's pretty amazing, and our buddies at Spark, they still need to raise another 140K.
Yeah.
But things are moving.
Yeah, they need to push. There's no doubt about it. They need to go to the whip, but I don't know if they're going to make it or not.
Is there enough time to? I mean, they're selling $60 packages. So, is there enough time to get enough people paying $60 to make up the difference?
Right. Yeah, that's a lot of backers to get in a short amount of time. What about six days?
Yeah, 5 days.
Yeah, I can see them getting to 150, maybe even 200,000. So it's getting to 250. It's going to be really.
It's going to be a push.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's going to take somebody stepping up with the $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 investments. So, Steve, get out your checkbook.
I know.
Ashton Kutcher.
But Mini Demo is coming up, but that's not till next Tuesday.
Right.
And so they're going to have a tough time. And both Smart Things and Spark are on the docket, but that's not going to help them.
No.
That'd help them a little bit. It's still within the 6 days. It's just that,
Yeah.
If everyone that was there becomes a backer, it's still not going to push the needle as far as it needs to go.
Right.
It makes you think what is it about Spark that's not, I mean, it's gotten good backing. I mean, there's 1,400 people that have put down money on it so far, but you had Smart Things that just went through the roof, and blew past their goals. So it's interesting just to watch these Kickstarter things, because I think Spark is as good as an idea as Smart Things is.
I agree. It's just, I think it comes down to, they're somewhat similar in nature. So I think that the first in always tends to reap the rewards. Plus, I think the time of year has a lot to do with it. People are not necessarily focused on investing. They're doing things like buying for themselves, and it's the end of the year. Everything slows down. But I agree, I think the guys at Spark are great. I think Zach's a wonderful guy, so I'm a big fan, and I really hope they do well with Kickstarter. But I also know that they're not going to go away even if the Kickstarter thing doesn't pan out. I'm sure they will still press on. They'll just have to figure out another way to do it, and do that by looking for investors. And I'd be willing to bet there's probably some large investors already in Spark via Kickstarter that they could reach out to and say, okay, well, we didn't get the Kickstarter. Are you still interested in being part of Spark?
Yeah, but I would say that it all boils down to the difference in a singular application device and direction versus like SmartThings with the hub that is extensible. I mean, it's only it is as extensible as many sensor devices and control devices that you can hang on it. And the thing I keep looking at is the other big one in the space is Control 4. Mm-hmm. You know who those guys are. And you couldn't do anything as a DIY installation for under a couple grand. Mm-hmm. So, why would you do that? I mean, yeah, it's a lot nicer, and yeah, if you got the dough, it's great, but
you got to give it to Spark that the whole Christmas house thing, as we talked a little bit about last week, is I think that's a great concept.
It's very fun.
What a lot of fun. Somebody noted on our notes today, it's addictive to do. Is that you, Steve, or is that you, Tim?
No, I put it in there because I was playing with it after I put it in.
Yeah.
It was in the evening, so the lights were on, so I was turning them on and off, and yeah, it was funny.
You were the one doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Everybody was doing that, Steve.
Well, I thought there'd be more people on at the same time. I think there are like five or six people, but I seemed to be the only one changing the lights.
Mm-hmm. Well, what this reminds me of in a way is during the Japanese earthquake, which, by the way, there was another one on Friday the 7th. During the first one, when the tsunami was hitting, I logged on to a couple of webcams, the ones that you can control. And as soon as I pushed the arrow to go right, the thing would go left and then it would go up. And there must have been like 50 people in there making it go in different directions. That's how I felt about the Spark Christmas light demo.
Yeah, I was actually over at Coco, where Spark is got an office. And I was in there with some of the guys from Spark, and we were playing this was like the first day it was up and running. The inflatable snowman was hung up on the bushes, so he would only get up about so far, and then so it was really funny to see. But I think that's just a great concept. You always look for ways to get more and more people aware that it's out there. That's one of the biggest problems also this time of year, is trying to get noticed on the web is not necessarily the easiest thing in the world to do, especially. Right. Christmas.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And I was going to say, all of these Kickstarter projects that don't reach their goal, obviously they go and then try to do pre-orders on their own on the web, right, which is what QFO Labs is doing. So you can't do that. You can't sell separately on your own while the Kickstarter project is in force. But once the date's passed, you can go ahead and leverage that early interest you got and publicity you got, and spread the word and take orders of your own. So I imagine that's what they'll be doing. And certainly QFO is. And I was having a discussion with Kathy Grayson at the Business Journal on this, because they've been writing about what the local Kickstarter projects are doing, and she was real interested in the effects of PR or publicity or media coverage or blog coverage of some of these projects, and why does one catch on and others don't, and that sort of thing. But I agree. I think SmartThings was a bigger idea, and it did steal a lot of attention, maybe away from others who are doing sort of similar things. But, you know, those guys go out of their way to help back these other projects too, you know, which is great of them. You know, they step up, as do all the, you know, the successful Kickstarter folks, and they try to bring up people behind them, you know, Smart Things and Pebble were both early backers of QFO Labs. And, you know, QFO mm-hmm. hit almost 100 grand of their 230, but, you know, they got close to a good 800 backers, and they have most of their email addresses, I guess, are continuing to try to get people to sign up, and so they can keep talking to them, keep telling them what's going on, give the updates so when the product's going to be ready, and fundraising news and that sort of thing. So it's a good way to get started. And one interesting thing I discovered is that the IEEE Spectrum blog that wrote about QFO Labs, I heard that resulted in more business for them, more backing than any other single blog post. And they had really? A ton. Yes. The IEEE Spectrum guys, you know, the double E's, the geeks, you know, they love this stuff, you know. And
Mashable is all over those guys, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the other blog post that I thought was just fantastic for QFO came from PhysOrg, you know, the physics site of all places. That was like the best coverage, I thought, as far as the way they described the potential for the product and so forth. And that turns out that's a pretty big geek site. I saw them mentioned in regard to something else recently. Maybe it was at the NASA photos of the Earth at night. I can't remember if I saw them mentioned in regard to that. Oh, but
that was really cool.
That video. Yeah.
We should put a link in the show notes.
Yeah, it was cool, especially to watch on the Retina display, you know. Thought, whoa, this is cool. You could see Minneapolis, St. Paul shining. Yep. The U.S. map there. Bigger than I thought it might be, you know. It's a little brighter than I would have figured, but anyway.
Well, that's because you're out there with the flashlight app on your iPhone.
Yeah.
Pointing it up in the sky.
Right. Oh, my God.
So our buddy's Best Buy just lost a lawsuit against Tech Forward for $27 million.
Yeah. It looks like a pretty flagrant stealing of ideas. Well, yeah, at least according to the article. So it was,
guy that who made the decision at Best Buy to do that is still with the company. I'm not saying that anybody would have been fired over this, although
somebody should have been. Yes.
Yeah. But you know what though, guys, I will tell you that having been a manufacturer's rep in the early days and calling on Target and calling on Sound of Music and Midwest Stereo and Video and all that, this was common practice. Where you'd basically be educated by vendors who would come in and do pilots and help you learn stuff, and then you go over and you'd source product in the Orient, and this has been fairly common practice for a long time, and these guys Tech Forward had a pretty good case though, to really say, hey, look, you basically just took our exact model.
Well, and in this case it was software, you know, product in the Orient. I mean, yeah, Josh Koppelman and NEA, they both decided to go after these guys and spend their own money doing it. I mean, the funds money, apparently.
Yeah.
And, you know, what got me is that the Best Buy reaction was, an analyst reaction was that $27 million is little, if any, meaningful financial impact. Okay, well, so what do they throw away $27 million bucks every day? I mean,
yeah,
it's pretty significant. Maybe from the capitalization of the stock and in the stock market, it's not going to have a big impact. But $27 million bucks hurts, you know, and they're fighting it. They say they're going to fight it.
Well, and there's
of course they're going to fight it.
Well, and not only do they pay the $27 million. But if they want to continue with that program, they're going to have to license it.
Well, they did. They stopped it and they started a trade-in policy. So, you know, it's almost like one could question, did they get wind that they were going to get sued?
And
they,
oh, good point.
They launched that program with a Super Bowl commercial with Justin Bieber and somebody else. And then within a
year. Ozzy Osbourne.
And within
it's
a
somebody year, else.
They dropped it and a separate trade-in program only for phones because they say consumers were really only interested in doing this with phones. But yeah, I'd say they got caught and you know, it serves them right. And I think it's a victory for startups. And I agree, Steve, I've heard of others getting ripped off like this and, you know, they just, what can they do? You know, the big guy.
Yeah.
Screws them over and they don't have resources to come and try to fight their legal battles. But in this case, the two VCs said, okay, we're going to make an example out of this. And, you know, apparently Josh Koppelman did a post on CNN or was interviewed for some post on CNN and told the whole story. So, yeah, another black mark. You know, for those guys.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to jump to this thing on 3M's cloud library. I would love to talk to Meg Knodel about this because the whole 3M direction here with this cloud library is to be able to check out ebooks.
Yep.
From your local library and. And
right, you'll have to wait a little bit. Meg has just had a baby.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I believe
that's no excuse.
She and Nora are going to be spending time together and not worrying about library books, at least yet.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
she'll have an opinion, I'm sure.
Well, it gives her more time to experiment with this 3M app.
Yeah, exactly.
So Tim, have you loaded the app and have you fiddled with it a bit?
I've loaded the app, but it doesn't take my library card for some reason. I have, you know, downloaded books. Yeah. Yeah, I've downloaded books via the other ways that Dakota County offers us, which is, you know, you go to the website, you pick it out, you download it, then you use Adobe Digital Editions to sideload it onto your e-reader or your tablet or whatever. It's kind of it's a real pain in the butt. This is a lot more elegant where you basically, it's all done within the 3M app, which looks pretty good, but I can't get past the verification stage. So I think this looks like an improvement over ebooks, the way you get ebooks in the past. Very handy. I hope to get my my library card working.
Well, the only downside for me is I haven't been able to figure out how to find Hennepin County, but I don't think Hennepin County's in there. So I can't use it yet.
We have to move to Dakota or Ramsey County. Washington County is also in there.
So. Because we're incredibly progressive.
Because you're out of it.
Yeah. You're out of it.
You guys are Dakota.
Oh, yeah.
Indeed, we are.
Yeah.
That's right. This is where all the big things happen. That, you know, it used to be that things like this happened in Eden Prairie, but not anymore. So.
No. Although Eden Prairie schools, they just pitched
schools
the,
or
the
school.
District. Yeah. No, the district just... just pitched the school board on a tablet initiative. So they're going to go toward one-to-one for students. So by 2016, every student in the district will have their own tablet. Of course, by then, it'll probably be embedded technology or glasses or something else.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Phil, are we disturbing you? Are you printing?
I'm sorry. My apologies. I thought that was going to be quieter. My bad.
No worries. No worries. So T-Mobile CEO confirms the iPhone and the death of phone subsidies.
Yeah, I think this is actually a pretty big story, not because of the iPhone, which you know, everyone was expecting, but they've killed their classic plans, which are the old subsidy laden, you know, rate plans.
Mm-hmm.
And they're moving everybody over time. I'm still on the classic plan because I have some grandfathered stuff in there, but you know, it looks like a real play to grab AT&T subscribers, because, you know, especially if they're on the iPhone, if you have an iPhone that works, and you're paying, I don't know what's the current charge. What is it, $79 or $89 a month for your service? You know, I think the equivalent T-Mobile service is something like $59.
Yeah.
So and they have true unlimited data. So it's not you know, throttled data anymore. It's truly, you know, you just get unlimited. So, you know, I think that
interesting. Yeah.
This is the way that people buy phones in most of the rest of the world, where they don't get phone subsidies. They pay more or less full price.
Yep.
And you pay less for your service. And, you know, you upgrade your phones less frequently because you're paying $500 or $600 for your device.
Well, and most importantly, when you go to another country, which is more common in Europe than here, you can buy a local SIM card, just pop it in because you have an unlocked phone.
Right. Yep. Well, I think that they're going to still sell locked phones, but you can buy from the Google Play Store. You can buy the Nexus 4 for $200 or $300. And that's fully unlocked, and that'll work on AT&T or T-Mobile or anybody else that runs GSM worldwide. So
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Boy, I mean, that would almost be worth it to have it as a backup phone.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I would pay the $350 and get the 16 gig model, personally.
Yeah, yeah.
So. Isn't
T-Mobile going to allow, and they already do this, where you can buy the phone with a monthly installment, you know, like $20 a month?
Yeah.
They're not going to require you to buy the unlocked device outright. They're going to finance it for you.
Right. So if you look at it now, you can get a Galaxy S3 for, I think it's $100 down, and then you pay the rest of the subsidy. I think it's $15 a month for 20 months. So you pay for it over the course of your
contract
to your contract.
Right. Yeah. You still need a contract. Right. Obviously.
Right. Correct. Yeah. But the rates for the service are dramatically lower than competitors.
Right. Right.
So I think that's going to be their play. So it'll be interesting to see if more people move in this direction.
Tim, have you explored any MVNOs, the mobile virtual network operators?
I've looked at them. I mean, there's one called Straight Talk, which resells GSM here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're exclusive at Walmart, I want to say. I think it's Walmart. Anyway, but they're like a prepaid deal that roams on AT&T and T-Mobile here. And their rates are very attractive. They're like $45 a month for, you know, an unlimited smartphone plan. So from a economics perspective, that looks, you know, really attractive. But when you have four phones on a family plan and you've got all the, you know, different phones in different states of contract, getting all four phones off of contract at the same time is difficult to make that kind of move. So,
well, I was just thinking about, you know, having a second phone, mm-hmm. you know, if you were to have a phone that you wanted to use in Europe, like my wife, where she could go buy a SIM card, but then, you know, buy one of these plans, because they also have, there are prepaid plans as well, as I understand, where you can just basically buy, you know, $50 worth of minutes or data time. And it just popped the card in there and it just use it until it runs out.
Yeah. That's the way that, Straight Talk works. Yeah. And others, okay. And you know, you just go and you buy a card every month for $45 and then you put in the numbers into
and
your,
just refill it.
And it tops it back up. And that's, if you go buy a SIM, in another country, that's the way that works. Like,
yeah. I did that with my daughter. She called me. Or sent me a text and said, "Daddy, I need some more money in my account." So I went and topped it up at some local, you know, on some website out of Washington State.
One thing you might want to check out is TRU, which is a mobile SIM company that's global. It's based out of the UK, but the advantage there is you don't have to like buy a SIM in each country that you visit. So if you visit a lot of different countries, that's probably a better deal because you have one SIM that travels with you.
Oh, cool.
And their rates are pretty good, especially in the UK. So when my son went over for his study abroad this summer, he took my TrueSim and used it in France and the UK for part of the time. And then it was more attractive just to get a local SIM there, because you can get one for £15. It's fully unlimited everything, or at least unlimited data and text.
Yeah.
And it worked great for him there. So between those kinds of options, it depends on, you know, kind of where you're going to be.
This reminds me, you guys never asked me why I'm not in Frankfurt this week.
Hey, Graham, how come you're not in Frankfurt this week?
Yeah.
What the hell?
I told you my story. What was that, a week or two ago when I got the junket invitation?
Yeah. And then they
and we all said you should go.
And then they did.
Yeah, I know. You all said I should go. And
then they did the blood test and said, no, we can't let you into the country.
No,
wouldn't give you a visa, would they?
The passport renewal was an issue, but that but I just decided I couldn't break away. But yeah, I was offered the chance to go over to blog the HP Discover event in Frankfurt, where they were announcing a lot of news about HP Cloud and other things. But and not ever having been to Europe, I thought, I'm busy, but maybe I should look at this. Well, I thought about it for a while, and I thought, nah, I can't do that. So that's why I'm not in Frankfurt. Just thought I'd let you know.
Yeah.
I'm calling from Bloomington, not Frankfurt.
That's all right.
Well, wow, they got their value out of it, though. They got a little PR.
Well, yeah. They
didn't have to pay anything.
Do you get maybe a travel voucher or a free soda or something?
Well, it was an all expenses paid trip they were offering. That's why, you know, I thought, geez, they must really be desperate if they're digging down this deep in the blogger list, you know. But and I later heard that at this time of the year they were having trouble getting enough people to go to Frankfurt. I know somebody who's an ex-HP executive, and I heard that, you know, even it was hard even getting the employees to agree to go over to the darn thing, you know. They have it up with bloggers and stuff in their social lounge. And, you know, but I asked somebody, I don't know if I was joking with you about this, Steve, or what, is will they put us in a room and lock the doors and make us all wear HP t-shirts or what?
Probably. Remember
that story about, was it Samsung that trapped the bloggers at an event and wouldn't give them their ticket home? Unless they did XYZ.
I didn't even hear that.
Oh God, it was funny. It was over in Asia somewhere, and they literally were threatening these bloggers whose way they had paid to the event with they had to stay or do something in order to get their ticket home. They were like holding him ransom.
That's a good strategy to get great blog posts. Jeez.
Oh my God. So I was wondering, well, what would they expect of these bloggers after they've spent $3,000 or whatever to get them over there, you know? And so anyway, I didn't have to find out.
Dance, monkey, dance.
Yeah. Well, so Tim Cook was on Brian Williams' show last night, 30 Rock. No, yeah, no, no not 30 Rock.
30 Rock. Yeah.
Right, exactly. What is that thing?
Rock Center. And then he was also in Bloomberg's Business Week and Wall Street Journal. And the one tidbit that he dropped, besides the whole television thing and that they're intensely interested in it, was that they're going to be investing over $100 million to bring some Mac production back to the U.S. in 2013.
That's right. Unlike some people on this very podcast, there are people that really do value bringing work back to the U.S.
And I was thinking of you, Phil, when it
part
of the interview.
I had a thought you might.
Well, so somebody, I don't even know who, you know, because I read all this stuff. Somebody had said, yeah, it's probably going to be Mac Pros because the gross margins are so high on those.
Right. And then they can bring the unicorns there to get the tiers to put onto the Mac Pros. Yeah, that'll probably be one of the jobs. Will be the tier collector of the unicorns.
Yeah. Goof. I don't know what the hell you're talking about, but
okay. No, I don't either. But
whatever, I'm just saying yes.
That's part of what goes into a Mac Pro or unicorn tiers. That's why it's so expensive.
Okay,
it still won't have a Blu-ray drive though. So
right. No, it may not have a drive in it at all.
It won't have a drive at all, probably.
Yeah. Well, so the thing about you know, jobs coming back is the jobs report that just came out. And Phil, do you know what that is?
Oh, yes, indeed. We put in 140,000 new jobs in November.
And the unemployment rate dropped,
7.7%.
Yeah, but what's that, like 0.2%?
Yeah, but still.
It's moving in the right direction. You're right.
The big news is that they were really predicting about 80,000 because of Hurricane Sandy. They thought it would be a downtrend because of all of the, the loss of jobs because of that, and also those people going on unemployment temporarily. But they also said that they weren't 100% sure because, the numbers were going to be skewed because they actually interview people via phone. You know, are there people in your house that are unemployed, et cetera? And obviously on the East Coast, a lot of people are without phones in November. So,
right.
But it was big news. That's for sure. So there.
Well, that's moving in the right direction. So.
Exactly.
Well, getting back to the Apple side of this, would you feel better about buying your Apple stuff if you knew it was made here?
Would I feel better about it? Sure.
Yeah.
I always feel better about investing in things that are providing jobs for the economy. Now, a year ago, I probably wouldn't even thought of this, guys. I don't know if this was just sort of something that I kind of all of a sudden became passionate about, but again, I'm not poo-pooing the world economy because we are in a world economy, but I also know that I'd like to get a disproportional fair share for the U.S. economy. So call me crazy.
Well, and I think that it's, what disturbs me more than losing some manufacturing jobs that are low level and low skill mm-hmm. is what's happening with like IBM with their services group, where they are literally en masse moving jobs to India, and they're flying people over here to train them, in fact, down in Iowa. And that disturbs me more than anything else, because you end up with people that have, 100 to 150K service jobs that are extraordinarily knowledgeable about, network design or fill in the blank, whatever. Mm-hmm. And those jobs those people are training their replacements, and then they're laid off, and then the bench is now in India. And that bothers me more than anything else. IBM's not the only company doing it.
This is the same discussion we were having 15 years ago when I was at Kodak about where you make your products. And the products are being made in Rochester, New York, and in outside of Colorado Springs in Colorado. And we moved a lot of the production to Guadalajara. And then after that, I think it was moved to China. And you basically, you're following the lower cost of production.
Right.
And so that now we're seeing the same sort of thing that happened in manufacturing a decade ago happen with service jobs.
Well, and there was a point when I was doing some print stuff when I was at a company in the mid-90s, and we ended up shipping the digital files over to Taiwan because a pressman running a press here was making, $20 to $24 an hour, and over in Taiwan they made $24 a day.
Yeah.
And if you had enough...
Or a week or a month.
Well, yeah. No, I mean, the wages are pretty high in Taiwan, but the point was, is that if you had the lead time, you could send the digital file over there. They would send you the proof, and then you'd have them print the job, and then they'd throw it on a ship, and it would take 2 weeks to come across the water. So if you had the lead time, you could cut your printing bill dramatically. And boy, I tell you, we were doing a catalog. It was like, 150-page catalog, full color, and the budget was about $150,000 less by doing that. And so, that's pretty tough, to your point, Tim. That's pretty tough to look at if you're, trying to build shareholder value, and you can take that kind of metric and do it over and over and over and over and over again. It's pretty tough to say, let's keep the jobs here.
See, I got something along these lines. Have you guys been keeping up on what Tata Consulting Services is doing right here in Bloomington?
No.
I noticed their name is now emblazoned up in the upper left corner of the 8300 tower because they have at least two floors there now full of techies they're bringing over from India to serve companies like Target, I believe, and wow. I don't know, maybe even Best Buy. I'm not sure which clients they all support, but there are a ton of people they brought over here, you know, without their families. I mean, like, you know, bring them over on, I don't know if these would be 6 month visas or what, but yeah, there's a ton of them now being housed right here in Bloomington.
Yeah. Well, it's the same way with Emerson, formerly Rosemount, right here in mm-hmm. the Prairie. Same thing. I mean, people come over for 6 months and yeah, you know, and it's tough because there is a guy that it's a long story. I won't go through the whole reason for the connection, but he has his PhD in computer science, which he got here at Carnegie Mellon, and went back over to India, and then came back over here to work at Emerson, and again, he's only here for I think it's 6 months, but you know, I'm sure he's being paid a fraction of what you'd pay a doctoral level person here in the U.S.
And of course they send a lot of their money back home to India, of course.
Yeah.
Since they really have no lives here, they probably work 12 hours a day and do practically nothing and just send all the money back home to their families.
Yeah.
By the way, I just have to say, I love Tatas. But that's another topic.
Oh, man.
I love the name of that company. Okay. How could you not like Tata's, you know?
Yeah. Well, let's skip ahead to
yes,
to
please.
Something that that actually deserves some conversation in our gang mentality segment, which yes. is Mary Meeker, the woman who was formerly the top internet analyst at Morgan Stanley. She went to Kleiner Perkins Caulfield Byers as a partner, and she does her internet trends update. She did her first one in May this year, and that was, you know, got a lot of buzz and so forth. Well, she just did a year-end update to Stanford Business School to students, and immediately it was on the net, and we'll put a link in the show notes to it, but I don't know if you guys have had a chance to go through it, but honest to God, you know, the biggest thing for me, she goes through basic stats, you know, about internet growth and mobile adoption. And there's a really great graph about Microsoft, and you can see visually why they're on the ropes right now. But then she talks about reimagination of just about everything. But the big aha to me was going through the slides, which I think start on 59, about the asset light generation.
Yeah. And that's the part that I took away too. It's around slide 60. It starts.
That was, yeah. And honest to God, when I saw that, as I thought to myself, that's, I mean, I'm even there where, you know, I'm not buying DVDs anymore at all. Everything's streamed. My music is streamed. The whole family's that way. And we're marching toward being more and more asset light. In fact, my wife and I are talking about once the kids are out of the house, we just literally want to pack up a few things and just sell the house and get rid of everything.
Live in a tent with your iPhone.
Well, just about. No, actually, we're going to go
down by the river.
We're going to go get a used motorhome and park it in the Wilson's driveway.
With a long extension cord.
Very long extension.
And Wi-Fi. Can we go to Wi-Fi?
Go all the way back over to my neighbors to do that.
but we'll put a link in the show notes, and I would encourage everybody listening to just go through the slides. Just click, spend 15, 20 minutes and just go through them and let it sink in.
Yeah, there's only 88 slides, so how long could that take to get through?
Well, it depends on how you're allowing it to sink in.
I'll let you know.
Yeah. I'm looking at it on SlideShare, and you just click through. It's real easy. Yep.
Yeah. But it was really, truly amazing. And And we're looking at, because of our home furnishings trend business, we're looking at demographic trends and all the things that are happening. And, you know, there's one thing that's big with millennials and Gen Y. So, I mean, people 18 to 38, roughly. And it's stuff like place over space. And people are moving back into the city. They would prefer to be in the city around stuff and friends and all that than they would be to have a huge yard in the suburbs. And people are buying higher value things that last longer. And that's impacting the furniture business, which of course is core to one of our business units. And people are spending more money on certain furniture items because they're going to keep them for 20 years. And they don't want to buy a chair that'll last, you know, 5 years, and then they got to go rebuy it. So they'll buy a really great quality piece, and then maybe 10 years out, they'll recover it. Mm-hmm. So it's just, it's really interesting that just the shift that's going on, but that more and more we can do in the cloud. And you don't have to print photos because there's plenty of places to put them online, and you don't need music and videos and... I don't know. It's just interesting. And then to think our phone may be our wallet. We won't carry around money or credit cards. So
that's why we're all carrying around a server in our pockets now, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Is that a server in your pocket? Or are you just glad to see me?
Oh,
oh, good night, everybody.
Trevor Except Field. Though, I have to rant. Tim, you just hit a hot button. Oh man. No. Because you know what?
Crap.
Well, okay.
I pissed off Steve again.
No. How many times do you guys go, let's say you're sitting at your computer and you get a LinkedIn request. And so you accept it or whatever. And that's cool. And then I look at my phone and now I got to deal with the same request on my phone. And then I look at my iPad and I have to deal with the same request on my iPad to make the numeric designation go away, saying I've got, you know, a couple messages or whatever. And I really, really wish that these things would sync up without having to open the app.
Yep.
You know, that it could send a notification, that's great. But then if I deal with it somewhere, then send another notification that it's been dealt with.
Yep. How hard is that? That's the way that Gmail works on Android. Yeah. Well, is that it automatically it updates your status on your other devices?
It does that on mine too, and it does that with my calendar because I use Google Calendar in the calendar app on iOS. So there are apps that do it, but mm-hmm. but almost every one of the social apps do not do it. You know, LinkedIn doesn't do it, and so forth. So it's in my Ring Central messages that come in don't do it. So there are a lot of apps that don't. And I just wonder, how hard is that?
It must be hard.
Well,
is that a rhetorical question?
What irks me more is I'll be sitting, you know, watching TV, and I'll get a LinkedIn notification. Some random person is like friended me or asking to connect, and it gives me like the person's name, a little picture, but not a lot of other information. I have to like, you know, in the app itself, it's either like, okay, connect or not connect. But I want more information about this person. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Right.
Online, you can look into their profile and see, oh, okay, I see. I worked, you know, with them 15 years ago or something. But on the app, at least on the Android app, it doesn't give you that detail of information. So then you have to, like, you know, remember to go back online.
Well, I think they do. Well, the LinkedIn app on iOS does it, but I think they do that because they want you to log on and go in there.
Yeah.
I think that's
I guess so.
Yeah.
I just wish they would give you more of the full experience in an app.
Yeah, that would be nice. Okay, rant's over.
That was it?
That was it.
Wow. Okay.
That was it. But you know, just one thing to wrap up this whole thing with Mary Meeker's slide deck is if you guys recall the conversations we've had in the past about how the internet was fundamentally disrupting all kinds of different industries that we don't even realize are being disrupted necessarily. And it's not just, you know, the news stations and the newspapers and the magazines and you know, the ability to virtually work in different places, or to be able to do podcasts virtually, you know, like we're doing now. I mean, there are all of these things that are driving forward quickly. And, I just think it's amazing that, and she is the, really the only one that's compiling this kind of data and giving it away for free. And I find it extraordinarily valuable. Okay, with that, what events are...
It's interesting stuff.
Yeah. It is very interesting stuff.
So what events are coming up next week? The SMB, the Social Media Breakfast Group, they're having their bash Monday night.
Yeah, a lot of holiday bashes.
Yeah.
A lot of holiday, but there's, yeah, that's sort of a combination mobile event and social media. It's a mobile holiday thing put together by Verizon. It's sponsored, also sponsored by SMB. So that should be fun.
Yep.
What else? Then there's
mini demo the next night, Tuesday
mini demo the
11th.
Next night. And I was happy to say that I got tickets to that, or a ticket to that.
I got a ticket too.
At Second Branch came out, so we'll be at that. The MEMA holiday party is
the next night.
Following night.
Yep.
Three parties in a row.
W3I holiday bash.
Annual Minnesota Tech Holiday Bash is the next night, which is a casino night at the Aria at the June Lune.
Yep. And then Friday night, the 14th, is Cookies and Milk at Tim Elliott's.
That's nice. That's always a great time. He dresses as Santa. Ho, ho, ho.
He does.
It's always
exciting. And we're the elves caroling and out front.
We've got SMB coming up on the 21st of December. Social Media Breakfast. Be there for that for Jumping Tracks.
And you
Don
know what?
Paul is kind of hosting that.
So. And my wife and I are both signed up. My wife is going to go. She's never gone to one of these, and she's got
time now. To a social media breakfast?
She's never been to one, and she's got time now, and so she goes, yeah, let's go. It's like, okay.
So God, I've never had any luck talking my wife into that sort of thing.
Yeah, but she came to Mobile March.
Well, yes, that. Of course, everybody, you know, my son came to, I had everybody working at that bad boy. And then, let's see, the PHP conference is coming up on the 2nd and 3rd of March, and then March is happening on the 21st at the Earl Brown Heritage Center.
Yep.
Tickets on sale now at a reduced rate until just shortly after the first of the year. So it's going to be a great event.
Sounds good.
All right.
Good, good, good. Oh, that's, and then I got to put this into events, but that Da Vinci Fest at Stillwater High School, January 5th.
Da Vinci Fest?
Da Vinci Fest. Yeah. I did a post. Look at the homepage of Minovate.
That's right. I'm sorry. I missed that yesterday.
You did. Jeez. So. Anyway, I'll put that in the show notes as well. But because anybody can go from 1 to 4 and you can look at all the exhibits and so on. So that'll be cool.
And it's strictly about K through 12 education, right?
Right. Well, yep. The whole motivation is to create motivation and incentives for students in science, technology, engineering, and math. But they put a little bit of a twist on this, and it's really science, art, and technology. And I like that because, of course, you know, let's face it, design matters. And most of the time in STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, you know, the user interface stuff and the graphic design and all that, yeah, whatever. Let's put that over here. And they don't pay a lot of attention to it, but it's becoming more and more important. So
instead of STEM now, it's STEAM, right?
When
you put the A for art in there, yeah.
You should coin that.
No, they did. I thought I saw that. I've
Seriously?
Never seen that done before, but STEAM, science, technology, what does the E stand for?
Engineering,
art, and math. Huh. STEAM.
Cool.
Baby. Yeah.
All right.
There you have it.
Well, thanks everyone for listening to
the Minivay Gang Podcast.
Take care.
See you guys later.